Honey, I blew up the business.
Welcome to the podcast. We've got Lou Cordwell. Lovely to see you.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm fantastic. I'm very excited to have you on the podcast.
Likewise. What else are we going to do in August, right?
Yeah. Who wants to work when you can record fantastic interviews and put them on the internet?
Exactly.
Lou, I'm excited to speak to Lou because she's somewhat of a pioneer, in my humble opinion. She's had a fantastic history in the I guess call it innovation, doing new stuff. In fact, her company, Magnetic North, of which she was the founder and is the CEO, was founded in year 2000 to, quote, do things first, which I really liked. And it's a very, very, very impressive company. I come from that world of creative digital world, and Magnetic North has always been seen as a cutting edge pioneer of digital design. So check them out. But not only that, over that time, she's hit the heady heights, and she was awarded an OBE in 2018 for services to the creative and digital economy, and is the chair of the Greater Manchester Local Enterprise Partnership. I love how Manchester managed to get greater into its sort of
always meaning. Always.
It's the only region that can get greater into its description.
Yeah, I won't betide you if you forget the greater bit. You're in big trouble then.
Exactly. It is greater than everywhere else, I believe. And she's also the chair of Design Manchester, which is where we first connected through a mutual friend.
That's right.
Shout out to Malcolm Garrett. And was a founding investor in the Albright Collective, a women's collective, a network, which we'll sort of get into all that stuff. So she has a very illustrious career. But don't worry, we're going to break all that down and go into all of her disastrous moments today.
Yeah, let's pause there for a bit. And I think illustrious is just code for being a bit old now, isn't it?
I'm illustrious at least. Yes, I might be getting on a bit. Yeah, so thank you for coming on the podcast.
It's pleasure. Great to have you here. Absolute pleasure.
Now, this like pioneering spirit is I think a theme I can see in your career. But where I want to start the conversation today is I was intrigued to hear a quote that you said that back in, let's call it, late 90s, you absolutely did not want to start a business.
No.
But then you set up a business. So why did you stitch yourself up like that?
So I think I would always describe myself as a kind of accidental entrepreneur, really. And I don't even particularly like the word entrepreneur, but it seems to be a way that a word that people understand to mean, oh, you started a business. So I think, I didn't know anybody really. You know, my parents worked for the council and in the university. Everybody I knew who was a grown-up worked for someone, so I didn't. The idea of working for yourself and then employing other people was fairly alien. So I think just on that level, that was a bit scary. So my driver really was never, I want to start a business. What business can I start? It was coming out of a big network world. So I worked for WPP, and then the internet arrived, and I had a kind of view, having skirted around those very early stages of digital, which, you know, you will remember vividly, where, you know, you were making CD-ROMs and going, this is the future, you know, this is it, I like this. And then the kind of internet arrived on the back of that, and it seemed pretty clear to me that there was a whole bit missing in terms of, it was very tech-driven. It wasn't really about the experience or the client or the consumer or what we would now call user understanding, you know, but was then called audience understanding in my world. So I think I was trying to find initially a company that did that. I was like, there must be a company that does the best of the old and the best of the new. And I had a few meetings with recruitment consultants going, so I'm looking for somebody that like does this, and then quickly realized there wasn't anybody. And actually it was a conversation with my old boss who I met for lunch and was one of the kind of founding partners in his business. And I remember saying to him, like, what would you do in my shoes? You know, what do you go and start a thing? Is that possible for somebody like me? Or do I just go and go to a different country? And at the time, I was looking at a job in New York and a transfer just to another place for a change. And it was him really that, you know, as a kind of very normal working class Mancunian went, yeah, just give it a go. Like, what's the worst that can, if you can look the worst that can happen in the face and deal with it, the worst that happens is it bombs. And in a year, you're probably a bit more employable because you've got a different set of experience. So it was really that kind of conversation that made me go, well, I think I can probably handle the risk. And I think also that realization that at that point, I had no response, I had no mortgage, no kids, no family, no, you know, so you kind of get those moments in life, don't you, where it's like, you could probably do it then and there's pretty minimal risk, you know, so so it felt like, do you want to be 65 and look back and go, I wonder what would have happened if I'd just given it a go? And so that ended up being the driver, as terrifying as that was. And largely, that said, I still didn't really know what I was saying yes to. You know, I was saying yes to the business that I wanted to work for that didn't exist, rather than saying yes to the reality of what running a business turned out to be 21 years later.
Oh, my, yeah, like a lamb to the slaughter.
Exactly. And I do often say, had I known, I probably wouldn't have signed up. So sometimes ignorance is definitely bliss, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's funnily enough, I think... Well, it's 2001 I set up my first business, which was a brand design business. And that was, ours was born out of a kind of like, it was weird. It didn't have a great yen to be an entrepreneur. It was like, we think we can do this a bit better. Let's give it a go. And so in that moment, you're sort of like looking around for this dream job. You could sort of literally leave the country, go to New York and pursue this other sort of thing, like a travel culture thing. But then you chose this other adventure of the entrepreneurial path. So kind of you're when you sort of sat, and it became obvious that this was a path you were going to take, and that why not give it a go? How were you feeling in that moment?
A bit sick, I think, in all honesty. So I vividly remember the last day of like a normal job, you know, and the MD, who was a very nice guy, as I kind of carried my box of stuff out of the building, said, kind of good luck, and when it all goes wrong, you know, you've got a job in a year. And I remember being very grateful for the fact that he not focusing on the fact that he clearly thought it was all going to fail, but the fact that was very kind of them, that they were going to take me back in a year when it all went terribly wrong. So I think the moment it became real and became exciting and a bit less scary was a first client. And I think at the point you had like a brief, you know, suddenly it's like, oh, we get like, this is familiar turf now. Like, we've got a problem to solve. We've got a thing to make. Like, suddenly this feels like I can do this bit, because this is just what I've been doing in my other job. It's just this time I was doing it in digital. So I think... I think that first client was like a really momentous moment, albeit equally scary, you know, because suddenly you're making promises and taking people's money and you've got to deliver on those. So I think, I think that was a scary, bewildering, a bit exciting, but I think the bit that always made me nervous was we hadn't done it yet. So I've never been particularly comfortable with taking praise for things you haven't done yet. So it felt a bit like everybody was going, "Whoa, congratulations." And it was like, yeah, I've not actually done anything other than resigned and come up with a brand name. So this is, please don't praise us yet or congratulate us, because it's just been air. So, I think there were those early markers where you get a first brief, so it's real. You get a first office, you know, so for 3 months we worked out of my parents' dining room, you know, and that was just like, oh, we're just kind of in, you know, you revert to being a 16-year-old anyway once you're at home. So it was like, suddenly I'm a 16-year-old at my parents' dining room, you know, running a business. Is this a business? I don't know. What's running a business? So I think it's that, you know, you've got no role model, have you? You've got nobody in your head that you can picture, that you can kind of imagine that you're going on the same journey that they've been on. So it was daunting, but at the point we started to get some tangible things, then it feels a bit real, you know, and within reach.
Yeah, see, sat at your parents' dining room table, like having this sort of flashback demanding cheese sandwiches or whatever it is you asking from your mum and dad. And you see, it's all kind of started to map out. But then I believe after about 6 months, you had a bit of a sort of early trauma.
Yes.
With some of your co-founders.
So I think we definitely, there was not just a commercial naivety to starting, but there was just generally a kind of people naivety, I think, in that we kind of gathered a collection of people who felt like they all shared the same ambition. And very naively, my assumption was that everybody's view of how hard you had to work, everybody's view of where we were heading, everybody's view of how the wealth would be distributed once you made wealth was the same. And so we really naively just went, okay, we'll divide the business equally. We'll all have the same powers. We'll all have the same. And it was only then, it's the classic prenup problem. It's only once you start to make money that the problems come in, mm-hmm. because there were some of us going, let's reinvest, let's hire more people. And then other people kind of going, yeah, let's buy a flash car and let's go and spend it. It was like, oh, this is. So it's the classic thing that now, many years older and many years wiser, hopefully, you realise the art of writing things down is quite important. The reality is we just didn't write, we didn't write down shared ambition statements, shared principles and beliefs, shared values. We didn't have a business plan that said, right, when we get to this level of growth, this is what we're going to do with it and how we're going to reinvest it. So I think it became quite clear quite quickly that we all wanted radically different things out of a business, and our definition of success was radically different. We realized fairly quickly we had to do something about that, and that was kind of, okay, there's a set of us probably want to stay and a set of us don't want to be part of this anymore. But that was that's one of those things that's dead easy to say now in a sentence. It was so painful and so personal and so difficult, and just felt like we were getting it wrong. It's like successful business in my head didn't do this. It got everybody right. It just grew seamlessly. You don't see those problems. So it felt like we were failing at doing the business thing that I wasn't sure I could do anyway,
Yeah, that's very quickly into it too. 6 months is not a drop in the ocean. And so it's very quickly you hit this very, very serious roadblock.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think, again, with hindsight, it was probably the best time to do it, because to do it 10 years in is much harder and more expensive and more painful and all that stuff, whereas actually better to realise those things early on. And we had a brilliant client without whom we wouldn't have a business, and she was one of the first people to just take a punt on us. She just liked us and she thought there was something there. And gave us massive credibility. And I remember having dinner with her in the first few weeks and being mortified when she said to me, she was pretty experienced and had come from the US to kind of lead digital for this client. And she was like, I love you guys, it's great, but there won't be five of you in a year, don't you? And I was like, what?
Really?
She sees a massive flaw. And she was like, yeah, that's clearly just not going to work. Like, you clearly all want different things. And she was almost kind of, giving me the nod that, like, that's all right, that's okay. But I remember being just mortified, that somebody's clearly seen that in us and we hadn't. So, yeah, there we go. Lesson number one, a big pain.
Yeah, I mean, it's, but I can sort of empathize, because in some ways you're so, well, I was, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs, you're so emotionally invested in the thing, in your idea. And particularly if you're creative, you sort of, you have a vision and it's very intuitive often, and you're kind of in this situation and it's flowed there really easy and you're having drinks and it's exciting. We've won a pitch and then it's like you start, then the grit starts to show.
Yes.
How did you cope with that kind of emotional component of that?
So I tended to, and I would say I still tend to, in fact, I was talking to somebody the other day who's a chief exec of a much bigger organization, that they just have somebody resign. And he was like, God, it always feels personal. And I was like, yeah, it does. Like, so I still tend to take it quite personally, that I feel like there's something I could have done, there's something I should have done, there's something I could have done better, I could have seen it, I could have. So I don't cope with it well, in all honesty. I'd love to say I'm really Teflon and it bounces off me. What I do feel now, as you kind of look back on those moments, is you can almost see, not just in that moment, in all the other ones that kind of follow, you just grow up. You know, you never, the only comfort you get is you never make those mistakes again. But, and those things now that you learn in that, you realise, you know, you look back and feel a bit naive and a bit stupid, but actually that's why what experience gives you, you know, is it takes you to a place where you hopefully never, you spot those signs or you see those things or you realise the art of writing things down and, you know, not assuming that everybody's got the same shared values and ambition as you and all that stuff. So I think, I think in hindsight you can see a positive, but at that moment in time, that business is a manifestation of you. So it really hurts and it's painful and you lose sleep and it's very distressing and it's nothing to do largely with money. And I think that, you know, anything for me that involves lawyers always feels a bit scary. So at the point you're having to engage lawyers to sort out shareholding and it feels very grown up and a bit scary, and people who earn more per hour than you are sorting out problems for you. So I think, it's a naturally uncomfortable place to be, and I'm not somebody who particularly enjoys the conflict. Like I don't particularly enjoy the fight. I'll have one if I need to, but I don't. It's not something I seek, you know, in terms of what motivates me. So I wouldn't. It's a bit like, you know, watching kids doing the GCSEs and A levels. It's like, yeah, I'm glad I've done it, and I wouldn't want to go there again.
Yeah. That's hilarious. So you've got this period in 2000, this really defining year, right? And so you didn't want to set up a business, but you did. And 6 months into it looking like it was going to be all right, there's a big blow up with the founders and it's all very emotional. And it's just kind of, it was like a divorce.
Yeah, it was like a divorce, yeah. Yeah, and you were kind of left holding the baby, you know, kind of going, well, I wasn't sure I really wanted this in the first place. I only wanted it because I thought we were going in as a group and as a group of comrades and, you know, and suddenly, you know, you're kind of left with the responsibility, you know, mum and dad have left home and you're babysitting, you know.
I guess that's a left holding the baby is a good analogy because it is a baby, a fledgling newborn that needs lots of care and attention. And so how did you go about after that sort of turmoil? And obviously the emotional component, probably sort of putting that to one side, you're sort of facing then the future. And again, we're looking back now, 20 odd years in this illustrious career. But right then, after month seven of your future career, what was in your head then?
So I think there was two things that I realised out of that. One was, I must still want it or I'd have run away. I'd have taken the opportunity to go, yeah, do you know what? You stay, I'll go. And I didn't. So that told me something. And the other thing that I realised in the art of writing things down and realising how we hadn't done that is we sat down and went, all right, so what is the business we want to build then? Like, let's be really clear on that and what that looks like. And it was very clear with people who were left in the business that there was this kind of shared ambition around doing things that hadn't been done before. That's where we wanted our reputation to be. We largely didn't care about making money. We somewhere had to kind of have enough to pay the bills, but that we had no exit strategy or no kind of this is how we go from zero to $1 billion. It was just like, how do we make amazing work? And we wrote, albeit, you know, a very rudimentary writing things down. We wrote a list of people we wanted to work for. We were like, okay, who are the clients that we would like to work for if we're going to deliver on that ambition? And we literally worked our way through that list from one to the next, to the next, to the next, until we've got those first 10 clients as clients. And then suddenly we were like, oh, this is how you plan. This is how you, on a really basic level, that's how you build a plan. And I think in a creative business, there's this really weird moment that you kind of take for granted many years down the line, where it's only when you look back and think about it and you talk to businesses that are going through that same moment now, where, you know, the only thing you've got is your personal reputation, which, you know, in your early 20s, who's anybody, and portfolio. So if you don't have a portfolio, there's this really weird moment where you need to find a way to give clients confidence that you can do stuff for them that's of value, And then there's this amazing moment at the point you've got your first half dozen projects that you can show people what they've done, and it's a massive tipping point. So I think that the thing for us that bridged that gap was understanding a year in, 18 months in, who it was we wanted to work for. And we just were really quite bullseye. So I quite liked that then. I was like, oh, this is like the thrill of the chase and getting those people to say yes and believe in us and give us an amazing project and then show the world what we've made. So I think that was, we definitely, you know, and potentially without that horrible, we hadn't written things down moment, we wouldn't have done the writing things down to get us to the next bit. So yeah, you've got to kind of see the positive side of these things, haven't you? But it made me realise that actually I was quite in love with the business. I was quite in love with the thing we were starting to make and the idea of doing things that, you know, I mean, you know, I laugh now, but Brendan, who was then creative director, and I used to go, in 20 years' time, we want to be able to look now. Now we're 20 years on, but we were very clear that we wanted to go. Actually, we want to be clear about the things we moved on a bit. We're not going to change the world. We're not rocket scientists. We're not, but we want to be clear in our industry that there's a clear story about the things we did that just moved things forward. You know, that just in our weird geeky design world were pioneering and did change things and did break something that had not been done before. And, you know, so I think suddenly it felt like we had a bit of a game plan, something worth the pain and running at.
Interesting. So you've got the clarification piece of what the future might look like. You've got this painful experience and again, it's an interesting point that the absence of something that you didn't want to run away, you didn't want to jack it in. So despite you not wanting to do it, after 6 months, you found you did want to do it.
Yeah. And I think there's a bit of tenacity there, isn't there? I mean, I do think one of the, you know, when you meet people like you and I, and I know you're Marilyn on before, and, you know, like lots of people, we're all in like massively different walks of life in many ways. And we come from different, but you meet those people that survived the journey, and there is something pretty tenacious about, you know, sometimes not always a good thing because you've got to know when to let go, but that just grabbing hold of something and getting it over the line. So I think there's just something in people's characters at a certain point, isn't it, that kicks in where you're like, no, you know, we will not fail. We will get this there. We will get it. If it bloody kills me, we'll do it, you know.
Mm. Yeah, the refusal to stop.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
On that subject, just again, with the benefit of hindsight, so we've started at the start of your sort of entrepreneurial adventure, but now, starting where we are now, looking back, what would you think, are there any particular bits that ring out to you as the bits where that tenacity had to really kick in?
Oh, Lord. So I think on a personal level, having kids and then having a business, so you have this weird moment, I think whether you're a man or what, whether you're physically having the kids or you're part of a unit that's having the kids, you go through this phase where it's quite an indulgence because you've got a life where it's all you think about and you've got nothing else clouds that. You can spend 24 hours a day thinking about your first baby, which is your business. And then there's this really odd kind of disruptive moment in your life where you have children of your own. And I found it difficult to role model. I didn't have anybody in my head where I was like, but this is how they've done it. And this is how. So I think there was definitely a point for me there where it was like, it was probably only that ability to get smacked in the face and come back the next day and have another go that kept me going, you know, and like an amazing family network and but that business at that time was not structured to cope with people having children and somebody running the company having children. And it was an extraordinarily difficult, like personally, I think that was one of the all-time lows, you know. So I think that moment, we've had a couple of client relationships over that 20 years, which I suppose if it's only a couple, we've done pretty well, where you've realised some way into the project that they're not very nice people. And you think you've built a business and you've got quite good at filtering out the not very nice people. And suddenly you see your team being impacted by that and the business being impacted. And you've got to find a way to dig into something quite nasty and messy and work it out in a way that's still professional, but is clearly going to be quite painful and not very nice. So I think that there's definitely been a couple of those. And then I think there have been moments where, you know, you've just hit a bad patch, you know, and it's like, you know, it is the old adage with our businesses where you're always three phone calls away from shutting down. So those moments, you know, which we've definitely had over the years, because we're an indie, we're not backed by anybody, where you're kind of looking at next month's payroll going, I don't actually know at the minute where the money's coming from to pay that, other than a loan from the bank. And so that ability to dig ridiculously deep again and go, right, come on, we need to shake the tree and get some work in, and, you know, get everybody motivated. And so I think it manifests itself in different forms, doesn't it? But I think there are moments where you don't think you can do it again, and then you have to dig deep again and go again. So
yeah, I think that the parenthood, but particularly motherhood, I think it's a very particular form of digging deep.
Yes,
and again, I mean, I'm a father, but my wife has a different relationship to the kids. Yeah. And, you know, just through the biology of the whole thing, and physically that's demanding. And it's interesting now, like with remote work and what, even, I guess, well, hopefully one of the good things about people coming out of the pandemic is you can be more flexible.
Yeah, I hope so. Working,
which I would hope is something that will happen. But I mean, again, 10 years ago, that wasn't a thing, and you just technically couldn't do it. Just to sort of focus on that for a moment, because I think it's quite an interesting life moment, and you said it's the most challenging for you, for tenacity wise. So you got this, physically it's demanding, just having a baby, right? It just is. And then you've got this damn thing needing you all the time and not letting you sleep. And and then you've got,
then you know, the baby. Yeah.
There's the other baby, the original baby, which is also still demanding. But yeah, but you've got, how do you, I mean, again, as a woman in that position, you're leading the business, you've got a successful company. I'm sure you've got a team at that point, and people are looking to you. And like you say, you're only three phone calls away from oblivion. Yeah, how did you kind of, what was in your head when you were like literally sat there maybe with your newborn, and there's these other things sloshing around you? How do you kind of, what was going on then?
So I think there was a team of people, but what was difficult about a team of people is, which, you know, in many ways is not a criticism. It was a different moment in time, and it was what they were used to. They were used to having me on hand 24 hours a day, whenever they wanted to pick up the phone, and when they. So there was this very difficult adjustment period for them, and I kind of had a plan in my head, and like all these things, the plan, of course, never played out. So I was like, look, you know, give me 3 months. And I'll be back. I know it's a bit quick, but I can do it, and I'll be there, and I'll find a way. And after about 2 weeks away, and I'd quite, so I ended up in hospital for a week. I nearly died. Jojo nearly died. It was not a good experience. Mm. And about a week after I got home, I got a call from a client who was a very good friend and good enough to kind of tell me, who went, yeah, you kind of need to get back in this business or you're not going to have a business. And I was like, this is not good. Mm. And I vividly remember just the heart sinking of like, I'm not going to get. And so actually within about 3 weeks, I was back in work, and I remember, I still now can't listen to the music of In the Night Garden without a tear in my eye, because I used to go to work. I couldn't drive then as well. So my husband used to drop me off. He would pick me up and I'd come in, and it would be about an hour before Joseph's bedtime. And I used to sit him on my knee, and for the last 10 minutes of like In the Night Garden, and I just used to sit with like tears pouring down my face. Cause I was just like, I think probably had postnatal depression. I was clearly just devastated at having to leave him. And I was just like, Christ, how have I got myself in this situation? Like, how am I in a situation where, you know, all of this is on my shoulders, you know? So I think that was a very dark patch of having to keep the business going and having to, and I think there was a, and I, like, I'll tell this story quite often, but I vividly remember a moment where I was like, aha, this is what's wrong with the world and the perception of women versus men. And I've never particularly, whilst I count myself as a feminist, I've never particularly taken a kind of like, oh, I've had a hard time trying to get to where I am as a woman. It never occurred to me. And there was a client calling the office at 5 o'clock And I'd said to the team, like, I'm going to leave at five every day because I need to just have that last half hour with Jojo, who was like weeks old. And this guy, as I was leaving the office, I could hear him say, no, she's gone now. She only works part-time now. And I was like, wow, okay. And several weeks later, we sat in a meeting with the same client who at 3:30 kind of stood up and said, who was a man, and said, I've got to go now. I'm going to go and pick my daughter up from school. And everybody in the room went, oh, that's so sweet. And I thought, see, that's where we are. Like, we're in a universe where a man doing that was seen as sweet. And a woman, it was like, oh, she's part-time in it now. And it was like, wow, okay. Like, that's a bit of a problem. Like, something, when I've got some energy and some time, I will try and address a bit of that because, So I think largely you spend about 10 years feeling like a really shit mom and a really shit CEO at the same time. So it's kind of like, I'm not doing everything you need and I'm not doing everything you need, but it's having come from a time where 24/7. Yeah, so you kind of, you know, you go from that thing of like 24/7 is doing one thing to 100%, and then you have to split your time, you know, and I think that's true whether you're you're the child-bearing parent or just a parent, you know, you've got other responsibilities. And I think I really, really, really do hope that the weirdness of the last year that we've been through has shown, it's kind of unveiled people a little bit, hasn't it? Of like, we don't all have to wear a smart suit and bigger, because we've all seen each other's curtains and crappy ornaments and kids wandering in and dogs wandering, you know, so it's taken a bit of a mask off that. Whereas at the time, again, I was just in a position where I was like, I'm clearly, you know, maybe I'm trying to do the impossible here, you know, but at the same time, it didn't feel fair that you would have to give up your business, you know, in order to have a family, you know. So yeah, definitely tenacity and a good husband needed in all of those occasions.
It's funny. I remember, and again, in one of the interviews I saw of you, you're talking about trying to be superwoman, or this thing of females, women trying to be superwoman.
Yeah, yeah.
And what's interesting, what you're describing is a situation where you're kind of pulled real thin there. That's like you're kind of, I got this visualization of Superman trying to hold a bridge up, sort of thing. It's like kind of superwoman trying to hold it together and being stretched real super tight. And kind of, again, looking back at that now, do you think there's a sort of, how do you feel about that moment and the kind of sacrifices you made through that time?
So I think I don't know whether I made the right, I think there were some positives, but I think the advice, well, I do two things now. I'm always brutally honest with people and women about the reality of that, like the idea that you can be superwoman and do it all. And if you just get up a bit earlier and work a bit harder and, you know, work out at the gym a bit more, whatever it is, it's like it. The reality is it comes down to a choice. And whether you make the right choices or the wrong choices, you're at a point where you have to make a choice. And there was something in me, maybe just dogged tenacity rather than making the right choices, that didn't want to let go of the business. I felt like I'd worked really hard to make that. So I felt there was a set of people that depended on me and I didn't want to let them down. But I think you can't have it all, right? So we all of us in any life, whether you're a man, a woman, whether you know, really experienced, really young in your career, you know, whatever sector you're in, you're just going to make choices, and those choices are binary to a degree. You know, if you're going to choose, I know people who work incredibly hard and don't see their kids Monday to Friday, who are probably 100% richer than me. And those are the choices they make, and they're very aware of the sacrifices they make. And so I think there's a nice bit of it. I mean, I remember my son coming in when he was about 7, and I separated very much kind of work from personal in that sense. But I remember him coming into the studio when he was about 7, and we had like one of those mad days where like the BBC were in shooting lasers off the balcony or something mad, and a product shoot going on in the corner. And I remember him coming in open-eyed, and he was like, God, like, is this what you do for a living? Like, is this it? You know, they'd seen the business as the thing that took me away from them. And all of a sudden it tipped into being something that was like, oh, there's this incredible thing that, like, it is a lovely way for you to earn a living. And, oh, isn't that interesting? And that's interesting. And, like, my daughter we were moving studio recently, came in and sat on the floor of the studio with a giant pad of paper and was just drawing stuff just from being there, clearly wanted to make things. And I was like, so I think, I hope the good bit is you leave your kids with a sense that largely you can do whatever you want, that if you want to go and start a business, unlike me who didn't know anybody who'd done that, then at least you kind of know warts and all what that involves. But, you know, are they the right choices? I don't know. I mean, you know when your kids are grown up and know whether you've completely messed them up or not, don't you? And there are definitely, you know, I meet women. I think I have a massive amount of envy, actually, for the women I meet who've gone, I took 5 years out to be with my kids. I'm like, wow, that is a luxury that I'll never have. And mm-hmm. I really envy that. And so I think, at the same time, I'll meet them, they'll go like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do with my career now. What am I going to, like, you've got it sorted. So it's like, yeah, nobody's got it sorted. We all make choices and we all miss out on some stuff and we all gain some stuff if you're lucky and you get it right. So I think it's that, it's the best thing you can do with young women coming through the industry is just be really honest about the fact that you will have to make a choice. And at the minute, biologically, you'll come to a point where, as a woman, you might have to make a particular choice, which is, do you want to carry a child? You know, it's like, it's there's a biological choice there as well for women, which is particularly difficult. But yeah, I think you can only make it better by being brutally honest and going, this is how I got through it. And these were my coping mechanisms. And don't expect it to be like a John Lewis ad, because it really isn't, you know.
Yeah, I think the expectations in general, the myth of entrepreneurship in general, absolutely, I think it can be toxic. And I think particularly for women, and this sort of idea of like having, like you say, the John Lewis ad.
Yeah.
And your hair's all done and you've got a business and you've got a happy, well-adjusted child. It's like kind of, it's, something's got to give in there. Just in general, I think that's an interesting thing. You talked a bit there about choices.
Yeah.
And I think this is an interesting, I'm just curious about how do you make choices? You know, as you're going through, you've been going through your life, how do you approach that kind of that thing?
So I think two things now, a reasonably strong moral compass on the rights and wrongs, which I've learned. I used to feel a bit like, you know, you were a 6-year-old and go, well, that's fair and that's not fair. But I've learned that actually that's probably all you've got when it comes down to it, is your own sense of right and wrong. And then again, the other thing, which I'll always say to people, is gut instinct. Like, the times I have ignored my gut instinct, it's gone terribly wrong. And so now, one of the advantages of getting older is you've just learned to trust that and go, actually, I've just got, for reasons I don't even understand, I've got a really strong, overwhelming feeling that we should do that, or that's not the right decision, or that's not the right person, or they'd be brilliant in some way, or whatever it is, you know. So I think, just getting quite comfortable with that, which sounds a bit hippie-ish, you know, but you can matrix things, you can model things, you can, you know, racy things, you can do whatever, but you'll come down at some point to going, but my gut instinct says, like, that's the right thing to do, you know. And so yeah, I think increasingly for me, I'm quite comfortable with living my life in that way.
Interesting. Could you give us an example of where you've applied that?
So a very recent example, actually. So we merged recently with Flux.
I saw that.
Innovation Studio. And I think we spent about a year getting to know each other. And I knew one of the partners there already pretty well. And we spent a year and we did all the right science, you know. So we got some of the teams together. We did some events together. We went rigorously through each other's numbers, business, clients. You know, we did all of the thing that a good accountant would tell you to do. And then we got Rich, who's the founder of Flux, and I got to kind of, we'd agreed that we would make a decision by Christmas and we would go into the Christmas holidays either deciding we were going to do it or not. And you know what, we just got we got down to a, like, okay, we've done everything you could possibly scientifically do. What does our gut feeling tell us about this? Are we better, stronger together or not? And I think, you know, it was a classic example of just being able to go, do you know what, I've got an overriding gut instinct that this is the right thing, this is a good set of people and good things will come out of this. And it's a massive gamble because you're rolling the dice and gambling your whole business, you know, both of us. And that's absolutely, you know, the due diligence and the rigor helped us understand exactly what it is we were going to go into. But it still came down to both of us having to take a gut feel. And I think that's, yeah, that's probably a really good example of it playing out well. And I'm quite honest with people who go, you know, to our team, at a certain point, you just have to trust me. I think this is the right thing to do. And I'm going to always do what I think is right for us and for the team and the business, you know. So yeah, I think that's probably the most recent one.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's something I've been trying to be more in tune with personally. And particularly the last year when it's been this chaotic time. And actually, for what it's worth, I've had to really, what happened was with the pandemic was I confronted a load of stuff that I really, about myself, which I took for granted. Literally, like I spent my entire career running around being out. And I realized that actually that isn't really I'm not really a natural extrovert. I'm actually more of an introvert that can really play that role.
Yes,
and so I had to go quite deep into myself and do a lot of kind of almost like really reinventing the story I'm telling about who I really am.
Yeah,
and part of that has been trying to listen to my inner voice.
Yes,
quiet voice. And so I'm curious because I picked up on this. So I think it's interesting how you see this as very much a tool, and I'm learning to set up the alignment of the head and the heart, perhaps, so the feeling state. So how do you approach that? I mean, how do you, like, literally, how do you tune into your gut?
So I think this sounds ridiculous, but I walk a lot. So I'll go off and go and have, like, some time where, you know, the kids aren't around and the dog's not around and the phone isn't ringing and the, but just go and have, you know, a kind of long think about things. And then I think that there's that, that almost power, isn't there, of like overnight processing, as I call it, you know, which is you go to bed, you go to sleep on something, almost. For me, I often wake up with the answer to something, like a very strong feeling that, sometimes literally a kind of creative conundrum, but often a, you're like, what is, so I think giving yourself permission almost to not rush into a decision. So we're all used to working at massive pace and, you know, yes, no, 3, 5, black, white, you know, like we've got to make a decision now. And that permission now to go, we did it yesterday on something, one of the partners now, and I was like, I don't know, should we just sleep on it? Mm-hmm. And then just come back to it. It's like, will the world really change if we take 24 more hours to make, and let's do it with a bit of a sense of what the gut feeling is, step back from the situation and see it. So I think it's largely about time and space and giving yourself permission to do that and putting some value into that, you know, as much as it is sometimes finding some good sound, you know, just somebody where you go, can I just talk you through my logic? And almost as you're talking through the logic, you don't really need them to answer you. It's like, oh, okay, I'm answering my own question here. I know exactly what it is. But I think it is, it's a bit like meditation. It's a little bit of an art form to it. And it's seeing it as not fluffy, you know, and not nonsense and not hippie-ish, but actually just a really, like, that's how we operate as machines. Like, that's, we've got something more than just mathematical processing power, you know, we've got something else that's a little bit more soulful, and that's all right.
Yeah, I mean, and ultimately you have to live with it. So if you're not feeling it,
you're
gonna have to live with it, whether even like the data may make sense.
Yeah.
But and it's a real paradox, actually, particularly for, I guess, well, I have a tech business, but like techie people, I guess we're in a similar sort of space. It's all about the data and the code and it's got to work and it's a functional thing. And then, but really the art form, I think, is an art form of being a successful entrepreneur is tuning into, yes, the rational side, the engineer brain, the kind of logic, but that kind of artist brain, the feeling, the intuition, and having that balance in balance.
Yeah.
I was for sure out of whack with that, which I think thinking about it probably helped result in my crash. So for sure, I think that's something that, and sleeping on it, I do that. Like I don't do it every night, but a little bit of a review, a positive focus of the day, things that went well, gratitude, that sort of thing. And then what do I need guidance on?
I
ask myself that question and I write down something. And it could be, for example, questions I'm going to ask in a podcast. What's the angle? I can't work out the angle. And then the next morning, it's just, it happens.
It's incredible. I mean, there's something in the brain's ability to process overnight. And I think when I'm in my super worried space, the other thing I still find myself doing is I'll logic out what's the worst possible thing that could happen if I say yes to this decision. And if I can live with the worst thing, I'm all right. I've de-risked it for myself. You know, and occasionally, and I know myself well enough as I'm not a particularly maverick entrepreneur or a, you know, whereas there's people I know who are absolutely brilliant and their gut instinct takes them to just in 3 seconds, you know, actually there's an opportunity there, you know, and they're incredible at doing that. That's not me, but I can definitely logic something out and go, that this can only be this bad and I can deal with that. So therefore it's worth the risk, you know, but yeah, that power, like what goes on in our brains overnight, who knows? There's some magic there, isn't there?
You started the conversation talking about the art of writing things down. And I think actually just my own practice in this is I will write it down. Like, what's my fear? Yes. What is the worst thing? Write it down and I can look at it. And I think there's something, again, the magic in that, which is so simple.
Yes.
But unbelievably magical. And I would use the word magical, not even powerful. Yeah. It's like, it's just unbelievable. The transformation between it rattling around your head and being written down on a piece of paper.
I completely agree. And I'll tell you what, I mean, I learned it in my work with the LEP in a universe where you're interfacing with public sector a lot, where you can't do anything without writing a paper. Like you can't sit in a boardroom and go, should we do this and paint that green and buy that computer? It's like, you can't. Like everything has to be a paper. And I was I railed against that massively to begin with. And I would almost like purposely not write the paper, but do the PowerPoint or do the video or do the whatever. And then I've realized over time, like now if I need to work out something, I'll just begin with a blank sheet of paper and almost like that. Okay, let's try and just write a really just for myself. And that art of writing things down just for yourself, not for any other audience or for is hugely powerful, isn't it? And being able to articulate to yourself exactly, you're 50% there to solving the problem anyway.
Yeah.
I'm totally with you there.
That's really powerful. And I think just because if you can't persuade yourself, then why are you doing it? It's like you get this sort of like rational brain going, yeah, but you said you were going to do it and maybe it's good, but your just heart's not in it. Yes. And then the writing things down thing really helps with that. Right, so we're really edging up towards the end of our time together. I want to ask you, and I like to ask people this question, in 60 seconds, what advice should entrepreneurs ignore?
Entrepreneurialism is the new rock and roll. It's not. It's really hard. The idea that you can write a business plan and it will play out the way that you think the business plan is going to, you know, is largely nonsense. You need a business plan to raise funding and then accept that you just rip it up. What other advice would I give people or wouldn't I give people? I think the bit of advice that is true, but only true if you make it so, is the what you learn in failure. So I've definitely learned 90% of what I understand in failure. But I think the idea that naturally happens, and people say that a lot, it doesn't naturally, it happens if you sit and go, right, I need to learn out of this. But, you know, so I think that's only true if you make it so. But largely, you know, you've got to work quite hard in a difficult moment to understand what it is you're taking out of it.
That is great, actually. There's people talk about failure, but it's up to you to dig for the gold.
Yes.
Because it isn't necessarily apparent.
Yeah, I think so. And you can do that afterwards a bit and pause in the moment, you know, which obviously you talk about, or you can do it in the moment if you're lucky. But it won't, you know, largely in the moment, you're just going to deal with the moment, you know, so you're not going to do anything other than just react. It's the reflection afterwards. So that permission to reflect a little bit after a crazy time, you know, which I guess is a bit of what we're all trying to do after a pandemic, isn't it? You know, we're all trying to look back and go, what did that tell us? Because that was a bit weird.
No, for sure. And I think that's a really great way to sort of wrap up the conversation, because all this stuff, it's got lessons in it, but it's up to you to dig for that and write it down.
Yeah, exactly. Get a good notebook.
Get a good notebook, everyone. Very important. I do have one. I've just finished my one. I'm gonna need to get myself another one. But so that's what I'm gonna do later. So where should people find you on the internet?
So I'm mainly on Twitter. I don't do other social stuff. So you can get me on Twitter at Lou Cordwell anytime, anywhere. So or on LinkedIn if you're a particularly corporate bunny, then you can find me there.
Corporate bunnies, head to LinkedIn. Everybody else, off to Twitter. We'll put all those links in the show notes. And what a great, fantastic conversation. Thank you really for being so open and sharing. That's a really full of rich information there. So thank you so much. Well, I'll hopefully see you soon in real life. And for all of us and here, thank you very much. And I'll see you next time, everybody.
Do you want to get the top 5 tidbits from each episode email to your inbox every Friday? Yes, you do. It saves you having to go through and make notes and make a note of all the books and all the ideas that are in the podcast. We go through and we choose the top 5 we like, plus put all the links into that email. So if you just go up to honeyibluewupthebusiness.com, yes, that's honeyibluewupthebusiness.com, and just enter your email address. There's a little box. Just enter it in, and we will send you that information. And it saves you having to make notes and all that. That's make your life a bit easier. And of course, if you did enjoy the episode, please consider subscribing. We are trying to help people through this. So the more people that subscribe, review, rate on Apple, Google, Podcasts, Spotify, the more people will see it and the more we can help. So help us help other people, other entrepreneurs like you. And before I go, I've got to say big up to my company, the tech department, the company we blew up and put back together again. They're generously supporting me on this mission through the podcast. So if you guys want to have a look at a company that can really help you improve your technology, make it better so your business gets better too, boosting your sales and your profit and a bit more sanity in your life, a little less stress, then head up to thetechdept.com, the tech department. My company, give us a look. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.